цей козак ще завтра погибуде. Забирайся, молодий козаче, завтра погибуде. Я морозу та й не боюся, зараз розіб'юся. Я походу та й не боюся, зараз уберуся. Я походу та й не боюся, зараз уберуся. Чорнобілки, сідайте додому. Ой, ми хлопці, хлопці запорожці, верніться додому. Ой, ми хлопці, хлопці запорожці, верніться додому. Полетіли та й посідали, туман нарагає. Ой, раділи та й рататіся, гей, малих пускає. Та й рататіся, гей, малих пускає.
From Edmonton, Alberta, that was Kalabai from their CD Kolomenka Casualties and Rozvivaysya Zelene Bayrache, a Kazakh song. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння. При мікрофоні Павліна, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Ми маємо дуже цікаві новини на сьогоднішній програмі. Hello there and welcome to Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. I'm Pavlina, your host, and I am so glad you're with me. We have a great program lined up for you. We have a summertime recipe with Sylvia coming up. As well, we will have a feature interview with author Marcia Skripik from Brantford, Ontario. She joined us by phone to talk about her brand new book called Dance of the Banished, which she will be launching on Friday in her hometown of Brantford, Ontario, where she will be participating in the unveiling ceremony of the internment commemoration plaque that will be taking place in her town, part of the STAW project, which is 100 plaques from coast to coast being unveiled at 11 o'clock local time on Friday, August the 22nd. So stay tuned for that. She'll be telling us all about the book as well as her own family experience with the internment. So lots of great stuff from Marcia, as usual. As well, we'll have our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And we've got Dunai coming up next, and a song from their first CD. And as it turns out, Alex Fesiak from Dunai is visiting the West Coast right about now, trying to meet up with him. I don't know if it's going to happen. He's really busy trying to get around on the Lower Mainland. He's here on the island right now, and heading back to Vancouver and then home shortly. shortly after. So hopefully we'll catch up with him. If not, maybe we'll catch him in Toronto or another time. At any rate, meanwhile, here is Alex and the rest of the group, Dunai, with Oi Pid Vishneyu, Under the Cherry Tree.
Ой, під вишнею, під черешнею, стою старі з молотою, як із ягодою, стою старі з молотою, як із ягодою, і просилася, і молилася, пусти ж мене старі діду на вулицю погуляй, пусти мене старі діду на вулицю погуляй. Сам не піду і тебе не пущу. Хочеш мене, старенько, та й покинуть на біду. Хочеш мене, старенько, та й покинуть на біду. Ой, не кидай мене, моя голубочко. Куплю тобі катку і ще сіножатку. Ліставовий манок, ще й вишневенький садок. Ліставовий манок, ще й вишневенький садок.
Foresight and generosity of its donors, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been investing in the future of the Ukrainian-Canadian community for the past 50 years. Since 1963, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been funding initiatives that strengthen our Ukrainian-Canadian identity and enhance our Ukrainian-Canadian cultural heritage. These include fine and performing artists and arts groups, museums, cultural centers, education, as well as authors, journalists, and the Ukrainian-Canadian media, including this program. The foundation strives to become the premier not-for-profit foundation in a Canada which acknowledges the Ukrainian-Canadian community as a fundamental component of Canadian society. Nash Holis listeners are encouraged to support this vision through continued donations into the future. To apply for grants, make a donation, or for more information, contact the Shevchenko Foundation at 204-944-9128, toll-free 1-866-524-5314, or visit shevchenkofoundation.com. And now, Ukrainian Food Flair with Sylvia Molnar. Tips for Ukrainian cooking.
Hello. Chilled soups are always great in the summer. Ukrainians love borscht, both hot or cold, and there are certainly many Ukrainian delicious recipes for both. The one I have for cold borscht with sour cream is very easy to make and a very popular favorite in Ukraine, as I found when I visited there a few years ago. The fresh dill, green onion, and cucumber make this soup really refreshing. This recipe will serve four. You'll need the following: 3 beets cooked, 1 cucumber peeled, 1 cup 10% cream, 3 hard-cooked eggs chopped, 1 tablespoon green onion finely chopped, 2 tablespoons fresh dill, finely chopped, and 1.5 cups of sour cream. Salt and pepper to taste. All you have to do is grate the beets and cucumber. Then add the cream, eggs, green onion, dill, and the sour cream, and mix. And season to taste. Chill very well. Serve cold in chilled soup bowls, jewel-studded, if you have them, with an extra dollop of sour cream. Seat yourself and begin an evening of feasting, nobility style. Yes, in Ukrainian tradition, dinner, especially in the homes of the well-to-do, although also in peasant homes, always began with soup, often three, one cold and two hot. This has been common all over Central and Eastern Europe for centuries. So until next time, treat yourself with the soup that's fit for kings and queens. Try it. It's Ukrainian.
Thanks, Sylvia, for sharing your Ukrainian culinary expertise on Ukrainian Food Flair here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. The 18th annual Bloor West Village Toronto Ukrainian Festival, the world's largest Ukrainian street festival, will be in full swing September 12th to 14th. Performers from across Canada and the U.S., plus main stage headliners Teak Band from Ukraine and Edmonton's Shumka Dancers. Great food, displays, and a special Maidan recreation. Catch the Ukrainian spirit on Bloor Street West between Runnymede and Jane Subway stations. Find out more at ukrainianfestival.com and follow them on Facebook and Twitter. Ontario, yours to discover.
Женці жнуть, хороші гості мене ждуть. Зелене є жито, женці жнуть, хороші гості в хату йдуть. Ой, зелене жито, зелене, хороші гості у мене, зелене є жито за селом, хороші гості за столом, зелене є жито за селом, хороші гості за столом.
Poland called Horpina, and a traditional Ukrainian welcoming song called Zelenaye Zheto, Green Grows the Rye. Up next, we're going to bring it closer to home and topical to what is going to be happening this coming Friday, August 22nd, commemorating the introduction of the War Measures Act and the start of Canada's first internment operation, which took place in during World War I from 1914 to 1920. This is a song that was written and recorded by Canadian singer-songwriter Donna Creighton, and she was commissioned to do this song. It is about Castle Mountain, and it is called Look, also known as 80,000 Voices. Donna Creighton here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. And young adult author Marcia Skripik from Brantford, Ontario, has written many books on Ukrainian themes, including on the internment of Ukrainians and other East Europeans during World War I in Canada. And she has discovered that there were others besides those from the Austro-Hungarian Empire that were interned, and she's written a book about that, which is just out. And as well, she shares some insight into her own family's experience with the internment and the aftermath consequences of it. We spoke by phone a couple of weeks ago, and I'd like to share that conversation with you now. Thanks, Marcia, for joining us, for talking to us about the internment and your experience with it. And you've got quite a bit of personal experience. You've written two books.
this is will be the third, because there's Silver Threads, Prisoners in the Promised Land, and now Dance of the Banished. Silver Threads came out in 1996. It was inspired by my own grandfather's internment. My grandfather was interned in Jasper, Alberta, and he lost his farm. Like, he was a farmer, and, you know, they always say that they were only arresting people who are unemployed and indigent and all that, and that's a complete lie. He had a homestead. He was single. He was strong. He was 18 years old. They just arrested him because he looked like a good slave laborer, and he lost his farm because he escaped from the internment camp. So they said that, you know, he didn't deserve the farm. He lost it. So he started back from square one after World War I. So Silver Threads was basically my love letter to my dead grandfather, if you will, trying to make what happened to him, give it a happy ending. So I wrote it as a children's picture book. It was illustrated by Michael Marchenko, came out in 1996, and it's still in print 18 years later. So I'm really happy about that. And then in 2007, I wrote Prisoners in the Promised Land, which is a Dear Canada diary novel. So it's written in diary format from the point of view of a young girl interned at Spirit Lake internment camp in Quebec. And actually, my grandfather plays a minor role in that. He's a minor character in that because the girl is writing to another girl whose neighbor has been interned, and that neighbor is my grandfather.
Ah, so he has a cameo appearance in your books.
Yep.
So you're third generation Canadian like me, and you discovered this fairly recently, and it affected you enough to write three books about it. That's amazing.
Well, it did affect me profoundly, and it's actually had such a watershed effect on my entire family, because my grandfather, while he was alive, he did talk about the fact that the Canadian government had put him in jail for something he didn't do. That's the way he talked about it. We didn't know the details. And he was really cagey about it. He didn't really want people to know the details, because he thought that at any moment he could be arrested again, because he didn't do anything the first time.
Right.
So he thought that he could be arrested just by talking about it the second time. He was a really intelligent man, hard worker. He was never able to run for public office, do anything terribly public, because he was afraid that his past would haunt him. You know, the past of having the wrong ethnicity, basically. And his kids, his five kids, went to a school, like, you know, a one-room schoolhouse, where there's happened to be in Alberta, was just on the border between the Ukrainian community and the English community. They had to go to the English school. So all their names were changed to English names. So my father's name, which he was baptized Miroslav, became Marshall.
Hmm.
That's why I'm Marsha, because, you know, his name was changed by the community who wouldn't accept them as Ukrainians. And my grandfather went along with it because he thought it would be safer for them. My father was beaten up every single day in school for being a bohunk, every single day. You know, so it had a profound effect on him, his siblings. They all felt like they had a dark secret to hide in the past. My Aunt Olga, who was then labeled Alice, refused to believe that anything that actually happened in their childhood actually happened. She actually fabricated a completely different childhood. It was kind of weird to talk to her about it, because she just couldn't admit anything about, you know, what their childhood was like, because they were very poor, of course. But even my father and his siblings, they, you know, they all had difficulties in their marriages. They all had, you know, multiple marriages. And I think that part of that is because of what they had, the legacy of the internment. It just kind of goes on in the generations.
You wouldn't think that would have an effect. In my personal case, I only found out that a great uncle of mine was interned. Very sketchy details, actually really none at all. Even his own family doesn't know. So I haven't got a story like yours to share, but I kind of have this nagging feeling that I'm always having to apologize for myself because I'm Ukrainian. So, you know, maybe I'm overcompensating as, you know, with the work I do in the community. But this has a trickle down effect.
it does have a trickle-down effect. And the other thing, too, is I'm trying to find out whether I had an interned ancestor on the other side of my family as well. My mother is, her family has been in Canada since there was, like, before there was a Canada. In fact, I've been able to trace some ancestors back to the 1600s being here. One of the branches was, from what then became Germany. So they came to Canada after, Napoleonic Wars and settled in, what is now the Kitchener area. And so there was one, young man during the war who was not only born in Canada, but his parents had been born in Canada. But I'm pretty sure he was interned in World War I because I found his name in the Spirit Lake logs. And there was a big secret about him in our family. Like my grandmother even changed her name. Like she wouldn't admit that she was part Polish because like the last name was Olinsky and the family joke was that she put an apostrophe there to make it sound Irish. And like my grandmother, she was born in 1909. So she was a very young child in World War I. And so this was her older cousin who was interned. And so that would have had a profound effect on her. And so when my parents got married, my grandmother, my apparent Irish grandmother was absolutely horrified that my mom would marry a Ukrainian to the point that she broke up the marriage.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So again, like, you know, yeah, it happened 100 years ago, but it's had profound effects on everybody for a long time. So, like, I would like to find out if that John Olinsky, who was interned at Spirit Lake, was my John Olinsky.
Now,
be interested to find out.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm sure you will. I'm sure there'll be a book about that. Now, speaking of books, your first two books were about Ukrainians being interned because Ukrainians made up the bulk of the internees during World War I. But there were other groups as well, as you've come to discover.
Yes, my first two internment books were both about Ukrainian internment. I've written 19 books. I just wanted to clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
Dance of the Banished, yes, it's about a different group of people who were interned that we had no idea about. Like, we've always known that the bulk of internees were Ukrainian, but mm-hmm. that there were other people from the Austro-Hungarian Empire and, perhaps people from Ottoman Turkey as well. But like that had always been sort of like a bracket at the end of the sentence or maybe an asterisk at the bottom of the page. Right. But a few years ago, I had two local history buffs approach me and they knew what I wrote. They knew about the kinds of things that I wrote about. And they approached me and they said, we got to get together with you for a cup of coffee. We got to show you some of these newspaper clippings because you're just not going to believe this, like how coincidences and everything can all to come together to one circumstance. Now, to put this into context, I've also written, in addition to the books that I've written on Ukrainian internment, I've written 5 books that are set during the Armenian Genocide, which also took place during World War I, but mm-hmm. it took place in Ottoman Turkey, right?
Right, right.
So, and I've also written books that are set in my hometown of Brantford,
mm-hmm.
Brantford, Ontario. So I got together with Bill and Wayne, and we had coffee, and they showed me these things. And it was about this group of men, 100 men from Brantford. Like, they were foreign workers who were working in Brantford at one of the foundries who were woken up in the middle of the night and like roused from their beds, marched down at the street, the main street at gunpoint, taken to the city jail where they didn't even all fit. So they had to find other places to imprison them on the false charge that they had all 100 of them tried to blow up the post office together in an act of treason. And this, you know, happened in November of 1914. So it was just after the Ottoman Empire had joined the side of Austria-Hungary and Germany. So hysteria was at an all-time high.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, on a number of levels, I wanted to write this story because it was in my hometown. And then once they were in the jail, it turned out like that they got notice that, no, this wasn't true, that it was just a rumor. It was an unfounded rumor. But they didn't let them go. They interned them. So they took them first to Toronto, Stanley Barracks. There was no room. So they kept on going. They went to Kingston. They were very briefly interned in Kingston, but that was mostly for first-class prisoners, mostly German officers who refused to share their prison with these dirty Turks, as they called them, right?
Hmm.
And also the Bohunks. They didn't want to be anywhere near these people who they considered below them, even though they were all prisoners. And so the powers that be decided to take the Ukrainians and the people from the Ottoman Empire and send them to Kapus Casing, which was a brand new internment camp. It was just being built. And I read camp guard journal of the time. And the way that he described it was that Kapus Casing was like at the end of the railway behind the big snowdrift. Now, it actually wasn't the very last stop on the railway. There was one stop beyond it, but it gives you the idea of how that would have felt for these men to be put, by this time it was December, into boxcars and sent up. Just keep on going north, 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 looking out the window, and all you see is snow. And they would have to get out of their boxcars every once in a while to dig out the rails and then push the cars to get to their where they would be imprisoned, and then they had to build their own prison camp. So, you know, like it was just fascinating. But the other part of this is that the newspaper clippings that the two local historians, Wayne and Bill, had shown me referred to these men as Turks. But, you know, to put that into context, Ukrainians at the time were referred to as Austrians.
Right.
And so there was this other thing that was going on, too, and it was kind of happening in the background, and I almost missed it. But the like modern Turkey has still not acknowledged that there was an Armenian genocide, right?
Right.
The 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide is coming up next year in 2015. So they have been looking for some kind of historical event that would overshadow the Armenian genocide or discredit the Armenian genocide. And they latched onto this little Brantford thing.
Really?
And so the way that it has been written, that this incident has been written in Turkish press, they've done newspaper, radio, they've even done like TV documentaries on this Brantford case.
Really?
And they Yes.
In Turkey.
Said that, in Turkey, yeah.
Wow.
But what they said, their take on it is that Canada interned these Muslims, 100 Muslims, took them to Kapus Casing where they all died.
Huh.
And then they were buried in Brantford. And first of all, like everything falls apart with this because, first of all, these people were not Turkish and they were not Muslim. They were of an ethnic group known as Alevi Kurds. Kurds is their nationality. Alevi is their religion. Alevi is like a pre-Christian, pre-Muslim religion that takes aspects of all different religions, but they're basically an aboriginal group of Turkey.
Hmm.
So they're not ethnic Turks. They were also persecuted, much like the Armenians. And in fact, there was a genocide of these people a few decades later after the Armenian genocide. So to then all of a sudden label these people as Muslim Turks is a real insult to these people who died at the hands of the government. But the way that I figured that out was that these 100 men who were taken from Brantford, do you know who they rented their rooms from?
Hmm.
Armenians.
Oh.
So the Armenians were all landowners. If you look at the actual immigration papers and all that, they came over with the Armenians. Now, in 1914... This is after the Balkan Wars, when ethnic tension was at an all-time high. Do you think that Armenians would be renting rooms to Muslim Turks?
Right.
No. They just wouldn't, because they were at each other's throats by that time.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was a very, very difficult thing. It took a number of years for me to get to the bottom of just exactly who these people were. And then once I did find out that they were Alevi Kurds, it was a matter of finding an Alevi Kurd community in Canada that I would be able to talk to. And that was difficult, too, because it's a very tiny community. And this group from 100 years ago, they just seemed to be, they just disappeared. And part of the reason is the way that the Alevis have survived over the millennia is to integrate and to assimilate. And so they had, you know, there weren't ones from back then that I could talk to, but I was able to meet people from the local community in Toronto who had come since the 1970s. And some of them actually had ancestors who were alive during World War I. And so the other thing that I did with this book was I was able to write a parallel story to, like, I wrote it from the point of view of Ali, like this one man in Brantford who was interned, but he left behind his fiancée, whose name is Zainab, and she was left behind. They were engaged. They were supposed to come over together. At the last minute, he got a ticket. She didn't, so he went, and then the war started. So she is there, and so I was able to, with the help of the Alibi community in Canada, recreate what her life would have been like during the war in Ottoman Turkey, at the same time that her fiancé is in Canada being interned. And so the way that I wrote the book is two first-person accounts. It's like they're exchanging each other's diaries. So they're both writing in their diaries, but the way that the book is written, it alternates between one and the other. So you hear what's happening to each of them basically at the same time because the diaries are dated.
Hmm.
So what happens to Zainab when she is in Turkey is that her neighbors, the Armenians, are being rounded up and deported into the desert with no food and water and dying. And what she did is what was a real historical event, which just stunned me that no one seems to know about this, is that the Alevi Kurds of the Ottoman Empire started a rescue operation, and they were actually able to save 40,000 Armenians from the genocide.
Wow.
And it's not written anywhere. And so, like, when I heard about this, and my contact within the Alevi community, his name is Suleyman Govan, and actually he is now on the internment committee too, but we'll get to that later. But in any case, he was able to read me old documents, translate them for me as we sat across each other at a coffee shop. He was translating all this stuff, and his grandfather was involved in a lot of this stuff. So, like, you know, and with oral history, like, this was very current to him, everything that happened. Where the Alevis live mostly is in Anatolia, the region of Anatolia, and there's a mountain range called the Dersim Mountains that separates Turkey from what was then Imperial Russia. And so what the Alevis were able to do, because they were mountain people, they spirited Armenians through the mountain passes to the other side, to Imperial Russia, which was on our side in that war, where they were then able to get to safety, 40,000 of them.
Wow.
And I had written 5 novels set during the Armenian genocide before, and I've got all my research papers here and all my, like, old memoirs, diaries, government documents and everything. So I went through all that stuff, and sure enough, I found references by every single first-person account of this operation, of this rescue operation. But the thing is that, again, they were not using the same terms. They were not saying Alevi Kurds. And so I didn't know who these people were. What they would call them were the mountain Kurds. And in Turkey, like, there's different, you know, there's different ethnic groups, and the Kurds and the mountain Kurds are completely different. It's like saying Ukrainians and Russians. Mm. Like, they're not the same people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't recognize that this was an entirely different group with an entirely different religion and an entirely different relationship to the Armenians when they were talking about this.
Wow. Lots of different layers.
Yeah.
Just in your story, never mind the full story of the internment. And people can find out what happened by reading your book, because your book follows history very closely, but fictionalized characters, but they're actual real events.
Every single event that happened in this book actually did happen to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that was the beauty of having so much documentation and being able to go to first-person accounts, is that for Zainab, 100 years ago, I didn't have to make up what she did. I just had to look it up.
Wow.
And, you know, day to day, because there were eyewitness accounts that were watching what was happening there. And the same thing for the internment in Kapus Casing. You know, I had the camp guard's diary, for example, photographs. I mean, there were, and then the newspaper clippings in Brantford. There's a lot of day-to-day documentation about what was happening. So it's a matter of taking all that and massaging it into a narrative so that there's, you know, a story there. Because this, I mean, it sounds complicated, and that was the most the biggest challenge to writing the book was to set aside all the complication and just concentrate on the main thing, which is Ali's love for Zeynep, and how are they going to get together when half a world separates them and a world war separates them.
And that's much what's going on right now, still in the world. 100 years later, here we are commemorating World War I, and we are just finding out about historical events that are significant historical events changed people's worlds right here in Canada.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, you've been appointed as a member of a committee of descendants of internees, and we're going to be unveiling 100 plaques across Canada to let our fellow Canadians know about what happened in Canada 100 years ago during the First World War.
Yes, the committee is actually called the Canadian First World War Internment Recognition Fund, and I am the internee descendant representative. So on the committee, I am the only internee descendant. So it's not a committee of internee descendants. It's a committee of affected communities.
Okay.
But no one else is an internee descendant. I'm the only one.
Okay. Now, we are going to be having this STAW project, which means 100. We've got 100 plaques from coast to coast. And
yes.
Here in Nanaimo, that'll be the last one because we're the last time zone.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so we're having the two unveilings here on August 22nd at 11 a.m. in front of St. Michael's Ukrainian Catholic Church and the city of Nanaimo. Their plaque will be placed on an existing cairn that was unveiled back in 1997 at the site of the internment camp here in Nanaimo. What is going to be happening in Brantford?
In Brantford, we are having a plaque unveiling as well, and it's also where I will be launching Dance of the Banished. So in Brantford, the unveiling will be taking place at the Ukrainian Catholic Church of St. John the Baptist, which is on it's 92 Terrace Hill Street in Brantford. And the interesting thing is that the church was built on Terrace Hill Street because the foundry was just below that hill. And Ukrainians and Alevi Kurds worked together at that same foundry. And they were all interned at the same time. But there weren't all those newspaper accounts of the Ukrainians because that was just considered standard, right? It was just so unusual to have these 100 men of this ethnic group that no one knew what they were. So it's very appropriate. So people are carpooling from Toronto, from the Alevi community, the Armenian community. We'll have lots of Ukrainians and, you know, our own community here in Brantford, plus the general public. We've already heard that both our MPP and MP will be here as well.
Okay, so it sounds like it's going to be very informative for people in that area. And
yeah.
It's just amazing for me to be learning Canadian history just by chatting with you about your book. So,
well, I mean, it's amazing because there's just so much that we don't know. And, you know, for me, I'll never write a book about something that I do know because I don't think I could maintain the interest in writing a book about something that I know a whole lot about. For me, every single book that I write needs to be an exploration.
Well, and it shows, Marcia, and you the thoroughness of your research and your interest as well shows, because who would ever have known that there were these many facets 20 years ago? We didn't even know really about the Ukrainians being interned, and now we're finding out about all these other groups that were affected, and that the effects up to today of the internment. So thank you so much for writing the book. Thanks for telling us about it. Now, hopefully we'll get a copy of the book to display at our unveiling here. I know you're going to be launching the book, so you'll have them there.
The official launch publication date of Dance of the Banished is August the 22nd, but they should be available the week before.
Okay.
So hopefully you will get yours.
Okay, that's great. It'll be on display. And, of course, there will be instructions for people who want to purchase a copy. Also, it's online. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's online and available at every independent bookstore across Canada. If it's not on the shelves, you just have to go in and order it.
Okay,
and
awesome.
They'll get it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Marcia. Congratulations on another book. I imagine your 20th is probably in the works.
Yeah, 20, 21, and 22 are, yes.
Oh, okay. You're doing that again, three books at a time.
Yeah, well, you know, why stop with one?
Well, looking forward to that, and best of luck for a great unveiling on the 22nd. We'll be thinking
you
of
you too.
Thank you. We'll be thinking of you here. Your ears should be burning.
Well, it's just going to be a great day.
Yeah. Yeah, super. So thanks again, Marcia, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Paula.
From 1914 to 1920, over 8,000 East European immigrants were imprisoned in 24 internment camps across Canada, including one here in Nanaimo. The city of Nanaimo will commemorate the 100th anniversary of the enactment of the War Measures Act and the start of Canada's World War I internment on Friday, August 22nd at St. Michael's Ukrainian Catholic Church, 4017 Victoria Avenue at 10:45 a.m., following a church service starting at 9:30. For details, visit www.nanaimo.ca. And of course, there will be unveilings in Vancouver as well, in New Westminster, and I believe Surrey. Check with the Ukrainian Canadian Congress local branch for information on that, or Ukrainian Vancouver online. Up next is another Canadian folk singer, this one from Edmonton. She was also commissioned to write a song about the internment. Her name is Maria Dunn. Here she is now with In the Shadow of the Rockies. And you are listening to Nosh Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver.
Young stranger, as you walk these trails of beauty, and you feel the mountain air caress your face as you play in the shadow of the Rockies. Remember who toiled in this place. Please remember who toiled in this place. They courted our labor and called us to settle the great Canadian plains. But how fickle the love of a fair young Alberta for her enemy aliens. And pity the young man in 1914 who hadn't a job or a trade, and doubly so the man from Galicia, for he was soon detained. Young stranger, as you walk these trails of beauty, and you feel the mountain air caress your face, as you play in the shadow of the Rockies, remember who toiled in this place. Please remember who toiled in this place. Our invisible hands worked in nature's cathedral for the pleasure of tourists in town. 6 days a week at slavery's wages, still we were not wanted around. At a camp that lay beneath Castle Mountain, rotten food and sodden tents. The most glorious place in the world is ugly when seen through a barbed wire fence. Young stranger, as you walk these trails of beauty, and you feel the mountain air caress your face, as you play in the shadow of the Rockies, remember who toiled in this place. Please remember who toiled in this place. Our footsteps and voices have long since faded from these pristine forest paths. Yet many's the mile and the hour we trudged here to our place of labor and back. If you listen, young stranger, the wind in the pines, or the water over the stones, you may hear the songs we sang to each other to remind us of our homes. Young stranger, as you walk these trails of beauty, and you feel the mountain air caress your face as you play in the shadow of the Rockies. Remember who toiled in this place. Please remember who toiled in this place.
What's coming up this week in Vancouver's Ukrainian community. On Wednesdays, catch Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio broadcasting live from Nanaimo to North and Central Vancouver Island, the Gulf Islands, the Sunshine Coast, Washington State, and Greater Vancouver. Wednesdays from 12 to 1 p.m. on CHLY 101.7 FM, Radio Malaspina. Contact TV airs on Multicultural Channel Omni 1 and on Channel 8 on Shaw Cable Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. with a repeat broadcast the following Monday at noon. If you have announcements or story ideas you'd like aired on Contact, please email them at studio@contact.ca. That's studio@contact.ca. And at 5 p.m. Sunday evening, slip your radio dial right back here to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver and join me for another hour of fun here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In between broadcasts, you'll find upcoming events, program information, audio archives, podcast feeds, and much more at www.nashholos.com.
Чужина не родина, бо чужина не
And that is a song by Luhansky Kozakiev from a CD recorded a few years ago called Hey Vedno Solo, Hey There Is a Village. And yes, Luhansky Kozakiev means Cossacks from Luhansk. And that is one of the areas that is being fought over very bitterly right now. And I think it's pretty evident that really they don't want to go with Russia. They want to stay with Ukraine. And this is not just something that's recent. It's been around for a while. Judging by this wonderful group that sings in such beautiful Ukrainian, that song was a traditional Ukrainian patriotic song, Chervonenka Kalinoinka, which means the red cranberry bush. And again, that was Luhansky Kozakiev. Before them, you heard the Ukrainian anthem in the Armenian language, and before that, our usual nod to Mr. Putin. Ну, ми вже скінчили нашу програму, ще час додому і сказати до побачення. Але перед тим, я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Як народові біда недмірна, то там і війна потрібна. And our proverb of the week translates as excessive misery in a nation makes a war necessary. Well, that just about wraps it up for another edition of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. To wrap it up, we'll have Prairie Crocus from Winnipeg and from their CD Back Up and Push and the Off to Battle Kolomeka. So on behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and AM 1320, I'm Pavlina. Thanks so much for listening and Dobranich!